I would now like to introduce Scott G. from Laguna Niguel.
Hi, I'm Scott G., Scott Gimbel from the podium. I'm originally from Chicago by way of Laguna Niguel, California. Hi. And I'm a recovered alcoholic on top of all that. And since I complied with the AA tradition of showing up in a suit and tie, I'm going to kind of just do this right here. Let it all hang out. All right. I'm really humbled and grateful to be speaking here tonight, and thank you for asking me, Bob. It's just an honor and a pleasure, and it's about the top of my list on things that I want to be doing. Alcoholics Anonymous means everything to me. It saved my life, and the opportunity to share the message that I've learned just puts me on a real high, a real sober high, and I'll share a little bit about that with you. Yeah, I'm originally from Chicago. I was sharing with one of the young men over there earlier that I'm from Rush Street, Chicago as well. I grew up there in the red light district, and I got here in December of 1985. I was on a geographical from Chicago to California because I thought you guys had clean living out here and, you know, get away from the other substances, which I'll stick to alcoholism because you guys didn't, I didn't know that you had that same kind of thing out here. I wouldn't have ordered all that stuff from back there then. And thank God for FedEx, you know. But, you know, when I always go to new groups, groups that I just visit, the old-timers, they look like newcomers. And the newcomers, they look like old-timers. So I don't know who to buddy up with. So because I'm always chasing the newcomer down. I want to see the newcomer, and I want to get their name, and I want to take names and see if I can carry the message. Like I said, I got sober in December 1985 on a geographical. My father introduced me to the program Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 11 years old, as he was a recovered alcoholic. So I kind of grew up with the program. I had 10 years of hard drinking by the age of 21, and I was definitely done. And I wanted sobriety very much. My way didn't work, and at that young age, I'd already been, I moved out of the house when I was 13, 14 years old, and sold stereos for a living, and aluminum siding, and all kinds of stuff that I can incorporate into my drinking life. And when I got sober, you know, I heard messages that if I was to go to a lot of meetings, 90 meetings in 90 days, or in my case, it ended up to be about 3,000 or so meetings, that I was going to be a success. And about year four or five of my sobriety, I wasn't feeling that. I suffer from alcoholism. And although the alcohol wasn't in my body anymore, I had gotten rid of that part of the problem, the ism was. And I didn't want to understand what that was because I thought that having a lot of time under my belt, or at that time a lot of time, was going to work. And as things progressively rolled along, you know, I wasn't putting the booze in the belly anymore, but I was, you know, kind of wanting to get more out of life than a bunch of AA meetings. And I went out in the world and kind of grew a big business into a big business and got away from the problems of not having any money, and, you know, money, property, and prestige diverted me from my primary purpose. But I didn't know what my primary purpose was. And about year six or seven, I had a very, very well-to-do guy. And, you know, I had everything that money could buy. But I didn't treat the ism in the alcoholism part. And, you know, I started to get a little bit full of myself. And, you know, all along, I didn't really pay attention to the steps. I didn't pay attention to the basic text, the 164 pages. I thought those were for people that needed to learn more about how to stay sober. And I already knew how to stay sober. I just didn't know how to stay uncrazy. And I was still sick with untreated alcoholism. And in not treating my alcoholism, eventually we do the thing that we're most apt to do, which is what I did. Alcoholics do one thing well, drink. And didn't happen like that. You know, problems began to mount up seriously. Business lawsuits started to fly in the door just about on a daily basis. I couldn't believe it. You know, I was just looking at that. And I had married a gal, and that marriage was not a marriage at all. We were barely married a year, and I promptly got a higher power in the program, which was a newcomer. I worked the 13th step, and I got her as my new higher power. So my mistress was my higher power. My business was failing. I had no God in my life. I never worked a step in continuity, or, you know, I stayed stuck on the fourth step for 100 years, and I didn't want to drink again. I really didn't want to drink again. And I ended up in a mental institution because I had the classic nervous breakdown. I couldn't handle life without drinking, but I wasn't willing to get myself through the steps to get to God in order to solve the ism. I was in purgatory, you know. I had a lot of time under my belt, and that's for whatever that meant. But I had untreated alcoholism. And I was, you know, everyone would say, ask Scott, go to Scott. You know, I had all the answers, but I didn't know what the question was. You know, the booze is out of my belly. And I'm no further along than the first day I was sober. So I kind of, make a long story short, had gotten to the point where I had expressed to one person that I really loved and trusted, and we were sober together, and I just said, you know, I just want to kill myself. I just want to, you know, I came to work one day. It was normal. I couldn't handle it anymore. I couldn't hack life. I couldn't deal anymore. I didn't want to drink, and I didn't want to stand up as a newcomer. My pride and ego were just so full of myself that I would rather die than drink again and report back that, you know, I'm taking a newcomer chip, and I wasn't going to have it. So I ended up in a mental institution, and, you know, mistress came over, you know, about a week after that and said, I don't think this relationship is working out too well. Yeah. Let me have it. I'm in a safe place, you know. And if you're going to break up with somebody, what safer place is there than a mental institution? You know, they got all the treatment they can get, you know. They're just safe as heck, you know. I'll just call the psychiatrist in after she left and, you know, and talk about it. And so, you know, I got out of there, and I got home, and I was still having nervous breakdown after nervous breakdown of anxiety every day. I couldn't even get out of the house. I remember one morning I was in the bathroom. I wanted to drink so bad. Now that they had put some, you know, psychotic drugs into my body, I figured I just had kind of a mini slip. I might as well go all the way. And I just remember rocking myself with my knees to my chest on the floor of this bathroom to get the courage to get up and try and get out of the house, you know, and eventually I drank again. And, of course, I would. I'm an alcoholic, and that's what we do. But I stayed out for 12 years. And as an alcoholic that knows what he is and the type of drinking that I did, it was a heavy 12 years. You know, it wasn't light. Eventually got a divorce, and so I was kind of free just to do whatever I wanted to do, and there wasn't too many people that cared about me anymore. Everybody in the program were kind of huddled in their masses of fellowship. They had stopped reaching out to me, and I didn't care anyway. I wanted to be drinking. Once I was stuck there, I didn't know how to get back here anyway. Didn't want to get back here. I thought if I came back, I was headed for another 3,000 meetings, and that wasn't going to do it. I was scared, you know, I was full of fear. I'm going to go to another meeting, and somebody's going to talk about their dead cat or their divorce, and I'm going to feel like I feel. So eventually, it really started to catch up with me to an implosion level of alcoholism and addiction as well. And I had met my wife in 1998, and I remember when we got together, my wife's here with me tonight, my best friend, and we had gotten together, and she said, "My sister's coming over today, you're going to meet my sister, she's very Christian." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah. You know, I'm all getting all tight, you know, I'm going to need a drink for that." And she says, "By the way, I think we're drinking too much." And I says, "Here, I love this girl, and she's going to leave. Because now she's on to me. Now she's got my number." But despite that, I kept on going, and, you know, I kind of toned it down the best I could. You know, before I'd see her, I'd get after, you know, so amongst other things, and try to contain it the best we can while we're trying to, one of the slogans is fake it while I'm drinking and make it, or I don't know what I was doing. Just trying to, you know, I want the girl, I want the booze, I want the money, I want all this stuff, and I can't have it all because I'm an alcoholic. And What occurred is just a massive meltdown in about 2005, and we had a beautiful daughter, and we were very successful in our businesses, and my wife wanted to have another baby. We went out to dinner on this conversation, and I said, "Can't do it. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm not going to stop drinking right now." Waitress brings over another double vodka to the table. I'm looking at this thing. I can't even pick it up. I'm sick. I've been drinking all day. I'm sick. Now, selfish, self-centered and selfish, isn't that what we are? When we're doing our thing, and even when we get a little bit sober, because we haven't gotten through these steps yet. And I had been working with a guy, or talking to a guy that I grew up with from Dallas, Texas, who today is my sponsor. And I drank into another 2 years until 2007, in October of 2007, when everything started to hit me hard, and I was just tearing up everybody around me. And I was in the bathroom at work one day, and half my body seized up from being loaded on everything. I said, "I'm going to die if I don't do something." So in 2007, I started working with this guy. He had 15 years of sobriety down in Dallas, Texas. My sponsor, his name is Tom Pick, and he won't mind me telling you his name from the podium. We had a similar story, because Tom had 15 years of sobriety, and he went out and drank. And he was going to meetings and saying at these meetings, you know, guys, I don't know if it's going to be today. I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow. I don't know when it's going to be, but I'm going to drink again. And there's nothing going to come between me and that drink. And he went out and, remember, he called me up and says, you know, I kind of went out, you know, I kind of didn't. Do you think I'm a newcomer? And I had been, you know, drinking all day that day, and I'm like, you're asking me? And he says, you know, if you're going to ask me, you're going to answer that question. Tommy called me up about a month after he got out of treatment, somewhere in 06, and he couldn't talk right. I said, are you sure you're sober? He says, yeah, I've been sober for like 40 days. I says, dude, you're slurring your words. You can't speak grammatical sentences. I'm really worried. I'm worried that you did brain damage this time. And a couple months after that, we talked again. And he was getting better quickly. So kind of the seed was planted of who I could call if I decided that I ever wanted this thing again. And I did. I had been working with a leading psychologist, a PhD, and well-known in Southern California about, you know, drugs, alcohol, and depression. And I'd go to his office every week for a couple of years, and he'd say, on one hand, we can get sober, and life will get better. And on the other hand, we can stay crazy. And I said, well, if that's the question, I'll tell you next week the answer. And then I'd leave those sessions and go out and drink. I wasn't ready after all this stuff. I wasn't ready after all this stuff, you know. And finally, I saw myself going to lose my family, my wife. I could tell she was getting a little bit healthier than as sick as I was. She was going to be healthier, and she was about ready to take it out the door and throw my ass out the door. And that wasn't the reason I got sober, though. I knew that in my years of sobriety, there was some semblance of peace and tranquility without alcohol, but I was scared to come back. I tried to come back between 05 and 07 probably three or four different times in the mass periods of sobriety that were meaningless. You know, I'm a quitting fool when it came to putting the drink down. I just pick it up. I couldn't make the decision. You know, page 24 talks about we lost the power of choice in drinking. I didn't understand the very basic thing in the first step of our book, that I was incapable of making the decision to put alcohol down, that I was incapable of having the choice. The choice left me long before the alcoholism started, the drinking alcoholism. I had no choice. I would swear off every day. Every day I swore off in the morning when I'd be in the shower. I'd swear off, today I'm not drinking. I'd be drunk by noon, 2 o'clock. Sure as hell, I'd come back into the office and everyone would just kind of part ways like the Red Sea because they knew, you know, here he is and he's drunk. I remember one of my employees, you know, we like to play God when we're drinking, and I decided that I'm going to go back and fire her. And she says, you can't fire me. You an alcoholic. And I said, I'm still the boss. It's crazy as it was, you know. And, you know, you could call it high functioning, low functioning. My bottom was deep and low. And I wasn't too sure about that bottom when I was 21, although the war stories, which I don't tell from the podium. I tell those one-on-one when I'm sponsoring somebody or somebody wants to hear about my experience with alcohol. It was deep enough. I am just amazed that I survived all these years with half a brain intact. And so when I decided that I was done for good and all, they kind of formulated some kind of intervention on me, which would have been the second one in my life. And you know how they all have the letters waiting for you, and you're going to enter the room like on TV, and you know they're all going to read to you how they want you to be sober, and because you can't scare me into getting sober. You can't scare me into sobriety, and you can't. It wasn't going to happen. So I let him off the hook because I was done. I was done. I came back from that psychologist session, and he says, where you're headed now is back to the office. I said, yeah. He says, there's a group of people waiting for you over there. I said, great. So they started in on it. You know, my wife was there too, and she was in tears. And, of course, she's always in tears. You could tell a funny joke, she's going to laugh. There she is. She's crying right now. And my partner says to me, he says something like, you know, I smoke marijuana every day. Why can't you control this? You know, and my best friend says to me, you know, hey, you know, you need a 30-day treatment. You know, and I was like, guys, I'm done. Let's go. Take me to jail, you know. I needed a medical detox. And when I was there, I had talked to my sponsor, who's still my sponsor today, and he says, you just go along with this deal. You get the medical detox that you need, because I was going to shake. I was going to shake and bake. There were other substances that I was doing, and it was going to be a madness. And I was ready, because I was done. And, you know, I got to treatment, and my six-year-old daughter, you know, her father had never been away. It was the same little angel that a week before I got into treatment, I got down on my hands and knees in front of her bed because she was the closest thing to God, and I said, please, God, help me because I want to be done. I just don't know how. I don't know how to do it. I tried 3,000 meetings. I'm not knocking meetings. I am not knocking meetings, but my sponsor told me some very important things. He said, buddy, we have a spiritual malady requires a spiritual solution. That's the bottom line. The steps are going to get us to the spiritual solution. They're going to get you spiritually awake. I was putting spirits in my body for all those years. Now I needed to replace the power of alcohol with the power of God. And he explained it that way. He didn't use higher power with me. We had known each other for many years. I knew there was a God, and I knew that I was about as far away from him as I could ever be. And if I wanted to have him back at me, that I was going to have to ask him. But I said, what do I need to do, you know? What do I need to do that I haven't done before? And he says, well, I'm glad you asked that. And he says, when you get out of that treatment center, you're going to get on a plane, you're going to fly to Dallas, and we're going to go through the steps rapidly, quickly, lightning. And we're going to show you how to recover and get recovered. Book says 13 times in this book. I'm a self-claimed big book thumper, guys. You know, without this book, I'm dead man. And I got to this place that Tom had taken me to. You know, here we go again, another AA meeting. But this time I walk in the room and I see 250 people, the happiest, healthiest looking guys and gals I'd ever seen in my life. I mean, I didn't think I was in an AA meeting. I thought, you know, this was a pit stop. Where are we? You know, these people are really happy. I mean, and I'm like, you know, they're taking something, you know. they're on something. And I said to Tom, I says, this is cool, man. What's up, you know? And he told me, he says, you know what? God's up. All these people here have had a spiritual awakening. They study the book. We don't talk about our problems in meetings. We don't talk about anything in a meeting except the solution. And we go out and we take this work to hospitals, we take this work to institutions, and we carry the message to the little sick guy that's still suffering that needs to hear the solution and not what the problem is. And the problem is not alcohol. How long have you been sober now, Scott? I said, well, about 3 weeks. He says, alcohol is not your problem. Alcoholism is your problem. Untreated alcoholism is your exact problem. and we're going to treat the malady. We're going to treat the spiritual condition, the internal condition that I've carried around since I can ever remember, that restless, irritable, discontent, internal condition that my father had before me. And I just come to learn the other day that his father had it before him, and my great-grandfather before him, who stuck his head in an oven because he couldn't support the family. And, you know, I'd learned a little bit more about alcoholism since I've been sober, and that, you know, it's a genetic deal. Most of this stuff is genetic, you know. They're not far from your family tree, there's some guy up there that was drinking away, you know, and treating his ism with alcohol. You know, and I was scared about the God thing. I was terrified, because what if he had done his time with me and I ran out of God energy focus on me? What if he's going to take the other guy, you know? I didn't know. I was just full of fear, you know? And we worked the steps fast, you know? 1 to 9, 3 days. 3 days. And, I mean, it was night and day, really. And it was easy. The first two steps were questions for me. They were easy questions to answer. Am I powerless over alcohol? Heck yeah. Is my life unmanageable? Absolutely. When I put the bottle, when I put the stuff into my gut, I change. I don't drink normal. I don't understand normies. Half a glass and they can be done. That is just insanity to me. You know? And some of you are laughing. It's insanity to you too. You're going to finish that glass and you're going to finish somebody else's glass. I know it. I did it 1,000 times. You ain't going to finish that drink? What are you doing? Came to believe power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And Tom explained that it's not the insanity that after you put the drink in your body, the thing, the behavior that I did. It's the insanity, the definite obsession that I couldn't get rid of. The over and over obsession. Nobody obsesses about alcohol except, my book says, the real alcoholic. You know, the book talks about the moderate drinker. The guy gets, you know, he can put it down. Wife says, quit drinking, or, you know, no nookie. And he's putting that drink down, buddy. He's, you know, cool. Then the hard drinker who gets, you know, maybe he's got some problems headed at him, DUI and stuff, and, you know, he drinks hard, and but he can put it down. He can stop, given sufficient reason. He can stop drinking. And then there's the real alcoholic. That guy was me. It doesn't matter what the reason is. I can't have a reason because it's not going to work out. I can't make the decision. I can't decide today I'm not going to drink because that doesn't work out. It doesn't matter if my wife's going to leave me or my child is headed to grow up in another alcoholic household. That's not going to work out. The real alcoholic, which I am, has one solution, which was the spiritual malady and the spiritual solution to the malady. So we went through these steps, and, you know, it was easy. It was easy, you know. I didn't have a lot of stuff that was unburied. I wanted to get it all done. You know, 10, 11, and 12 are the bitch, you know. Staying sober and taking a personal inventory every day, you know. I sit on the edge of the bed, or when my wife is kind of fading out, I'll pick up my mental handbook and go, okay, who'd you harm today? How angry did you get? And who do you owe amends to? But my primary purpose is like the fifth tradition, to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Without that in my life today, I'm done. I can't stay sober. Not for a minute. If I'm not, my intention isn't to find the alcoholic who wants help, I'm not doing the work that I'm supposed to be doing in the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening, and I was awake, because I had lost the obsession to drink after I went through those steps. The obsession left me, and I don't know when it was. I know it was about 10-15 days after I got back from Dallas, totally. I wasn't thinking about drinking anymore. I wasn't thinking about anything anymore other than following directions. These men and women, there's a lineage in Dallas. My home group is a primary purpose group of Laguna Niguel. And there's a strong lineage that exists in the primary purpose group of my sponsor, and then his sponsor Myers, and his sponsor Cliff, and Cliff to Joe McHugh, and then somewhere right there is Dr. Bob, one or two away. And these guys are all staying sober, and they're happy, joyous, and free, and I wanted that. I don't want to be obsessed about alcohol anymore. I don't want to think about alcohol anymore. I want to be free. I want to be happy without alcohol. Can it be possible? And it was. You know, my business started to fail badly when I got sober, guys. I mean, it was like downhill. I'm like, okay, I get sober and you punish me? You know, here we go down. You know, I'm going to lose everything. And I'm taking new guys into the office and I'm shutting my door. I'm getting them out of meetings and I'm shutting my door and I'm going over steps. Boom, 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's go. That fast, because my sponsor says, you know, I'll call him up and, you know, I'll say, I got this going, I got that going. And he'll say to me, did you talk to God about it before you called me? I'll lie. Yeah. Sure did. You know, God didn't tell me anything. What do you got? You know? Okay. Next. Here's what I want you to do. Go down to that treatment center. It's about 4 blocks from your house, and find out, and go upstairs and get a newcomer to work with. You know, I earmarked this page. I carry this book everywhere with me, the basic text. And, you know, page 14, bottom paragraph, particularly it was imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. For me, that means life. The alcohol's gone. I'm not going to survive the ups and downs of life if I'm not working with the other guys. You know, in Dallas, they get to work with women. First of all, in California, A, my wife wouldn't allow that, and B, it's not customary out here. But I wouldn't be telling the truth if I was. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. That's me. This guy they're talking about in this book is me. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. My book tells me things about must. My book tells me things about rapid. My book tells me that I'm recovered 13 times. It talks about recovering one time in the book. I don't have a drinking problem today. I'm still dealing with the ism. If I didn't have a spiritual awakening, and I didn't do this work, and I didn't get close to a higher power that I call God, I wouldn't be sober today, because I am going through so much crap. I am telling you that I have 1,000 reasons I could drink right now, and I don't have the obsession to. I got the reason, but not the obsession. My dog is dying of cancer. My father just got out of a coma for the second time. My business is failing. We don't know what we're going to do. These are great reasons to drink, aren't they? They're wonderful. I could have gone out on that. I can't afford resentment, so I can't do the anger drinking and drink at you. This program, the steps, are a miracle that saved my bacon. Because I finally found after 3,000 meetings that it wasn't the meetings that were going to keep me sober. The fellowship is wonderful. I love you guys. But the book talks about we trust in infinite God, not finite self. If I'm going to call you up and expect you to keep me sober, that's a tall order to put on you. I don't care if you have 30, 40, 50 years of sobriety. Because my mental condition is I'm an alcoholic. And without a spiritual awakening and without working these steps, I'm doomed. It is just bad news for me. Alcohol is, you know, it's killing more people than cancer and AIDS combined every year in the U.S. And we come around these meetings and we try and get in the slogans, fake it till you make it, in one day at a time. And I can't do it one day at a time for myself. It's just me talking. It's my opinion, my experience. I'm done. I'm done for good and all. I was done when I got here. I'm done for good and all. And I am responsible to keep spiritually fit in order to maintain that doneness. I am responsible to maintain that connection with God, even if it's just getting on my knees and don't even know what I'm saying. Yeah, I'll use the third step prayer and I'll get into the book. But sometimes I can get so jammed up that I can't even recall. Page 24 says we can't recall the incomprehensible demoralization of even a week or a month ago, that last bad drunk. The further away I got from the drink in sobriety when I was dry, the closer I got to drinking. Without the steps. With the steps, I'm about as further away from the drink as I'll ever be. With God, I do not think about alcohol. That is the miracle of the program. And I'm the real alcoholic. I even look like one with this hat and everything, you know. The miracle for me is the fact that I can come home today and the dog is happy to see me and the kids are happy to see me and my wife is happy to see me, other than storming through the door when I was a drunk. And no one wants to be around that. And they're scared of Dad. The miracle for me today is the fact that I can get a hold of new guys and get them through the steps rapidly and watch them recover. The first 100 worked these steps in rapid fashion. And they didn't even have most of them. They had 6 of them. You know, Bill failed miserably in his first 6 months trying to get guys sober. Bob had better successes. This was a trial and error. Many of people came before us that died from this, whether they died sober or they died drunk. I keep a list of 31 people in the front of my big book that died from alcoholism that I met in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Most of them went out and drank again. These were people that had been sober either short or long amounts of time, up to 25 years in one case. Without the psychic change, guys, and without the program Alcoholics Anonymous, and without the steps, and without a higher power, there is no solution. The book says that we have to live the spiritual life. It's not a theory. I try and do that to the best of my capability every day, putting God first and foremost in front of me. In my morning, my prayer, I can't wake up very good. You know, I still need 4 cups of coffee to get going. But if it's just a prayer that says, God, who can I help today? Another cup of coffee, boom, I can get into some real prayer. Sometimes I don't have enough time to get into that prayer, but I make time. I put everything aside for the guy that needs help. If I get a call, it doesn't matter what time. You know, if I got to run out, I do panels, I've been speaking more and more about this stuff. I don't do a lot of discussion meetings. We do a great big book study in Laguna Niguel. It's out of Dallas. It's the primary purpose groups. They've been around about 22, 23 years now, right, Ange? And the bottom line for me is that without that work, I'm done. I'm dead. I'm a dead man. So I will sacrifice anything and everything I can in order to get to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers and to those that want to get through the steps and not stay in the meetings and those that think that they don't have a connection with God can have one, or higher power can have one through working the steps. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak tonight, and God bless you. Mm-hmm.